And so, 75 years ago, at this minute, the first television transmission took place, handmade by a dedicated group of young people in their 20s. And it took place in a building up there. We'd also like to thank the news crews that are here today and filming the event. And it just occurs to me what an amazing thing for a news crew to be working here 75 years later, literally to the minute, that the first television transmission took place on the second floor of the building up there behind the trees up on the corner. It was basically an old warehouse. And I was thinking of that this morning as I was driving in from the East Bay, thinking of Phil and Pam driving over and, you know, to go to work at the lab up there and thinking that maybe today we'll invent television. And I would like to introduce some special guests that we have today that are connected to the past of television. And we have the sisters of Philo T. Farnsworth here. Agnes, could you raise your hand? Thank you. Agnes Lindsay. And Laura Player, could you raise your hand? And we also would like to introduce, starting here, Mark Farnsworth and Matthew Farnsworth, Diana Lopez Farnsworth, Dajra Farnsworth, and Arjuna Farnsworth, grandchildren of Philo, and they're all going to contribute to the ceremony a little bit later. And so, we'll go to Alex, who would talk to a couple of proclamations that have been issued.
Hello, thank you very much, and I'm happy to be here. I think I probably watched more television than anybody in the audience. Maybe that's why I helped out. But I really think we should give Dave Duffin a hand, because Dave is the backbone behind this. The other thing that it's important to acknowledge is that while we are here, a small crowd in San Francisco, this is an international event, and we actually have proclamations in from Utah, Indiana, and Pennsylvania, which are big focus points for the history of television. And we also, as Dave mentioned, today is Philo T. Farnsworth Day here in San Francisco, to claim that a mayor wasn't such a bad deal. But the thing that I'd like to do now is present one of the granddaughters, one of the grandchildren, Dajra Farnsworth, who has two proclamations that she should read.
Good afternoon. I'd like to read these two proclamations to you, the first one being from Governor Gray Davis. It is a great pleasure to extend a warm welcome to all who have gathered to celebrate the 75th anniversary of Philo T. Farnsworth's first television transmission. On September 7, 1927, Philo T. Farnsworth transmitted the first electronic television images at his 202 Green Street Laboratory right here in San Francisco. Today's 75th anniversary of television is a tribute to Philo T. Farnsworth and to his historic experiments that laid the foundation for a revolution in communications. On behalf of the people of the state of California, I extend my best wishes for this successful event. And here I have a certificate of honor from the Board of Supervisors, City of and County of San Francisco. The Board of Supervisors of the City and County of San Francisco hereby issues and authorizes the execution of the certificate of honor in appreciation, public recognition of distinction and merit for the outstanding service to a significant portion of the people of the City and County of San Francisco by the Friends of Philo T. Farnsworth. For your extraordinary work in promoting Philo T. Farnsworth's legacy as the inventor of the television, the Board of Supervisors extends its highest commendation on the 75th anniversary date of the historical event and joins in the celebration of Philo T. Farnsworth Day in the city and county of San Francisco.
This is just a vision by Pam Farnsworth, and it was produced at the time when a statue of Philo Farnsworth was put in the rotunda of the Capitol in Washington. Every state is allowed to have two statues, and Brigham Young is one statue representing Utah, and the second statue is Philo Farnsworth. I was thinking about this as I was driving in. The morning of September 7th, 1927, dawned with the high fog typical of San Francisco in autumn, but it had already begun to clear as we drove to the lab. Looks like what happened today. With high expectations, we climbed the stairs right behind you. Phil said, "Pam, if you'll finish the drawings I left on my desk for you, I'll let you know as soon as we're ready to turn things on." "Okay, but don't you forget." I didn't want to miss this one. This is Pam writing, of course, this book. The drawings were finished, and I had caught up on some typing before Phil finally appeared at the door. In the room where the receiver was set up, we waited as he took his place at the controls. With everyone standing around the receiver, Phil called instructions to Cliff, his brother-in-law, who was in the next room with the dissector set up. "Put in the slide, Cliff," Phil cried out. "Okay, it's in. Can you see it?" Cliff called back. An unmistakable line appeared across the small bluish square of light on the end of the oscillite tube. It was pretty fuzzy, but Phil adjusted the focusing coil, and the line became well-defined. "Turn the slide a quarter turn, Cliff," Phil instructed. Sure enough, the receiver line followed suit, turning 90 degrees. "That's it, folks. We've done it. There you have electronic television," Phil announced with a trace of tremor in his voice. He hurried into the transmitter to give Cliff a chance to see this historic transmission. Everyone stood glued to the spot, the import of what we're seeing slowly sinking in. This was it, all right. There was a raster with moving picture present. When Cliff saw it, his response was characteristic. "Well, I'll be damned." "What do you know?" Carl Christensen commented dryly. "If I wasn't seeing it with my own two eyes, I wouldn't believe it. I was jumping up and down in my youthful exuberance." George Everson arrived about then. Seeing him, Phil and Cliff resumed their places. "Stand here, George, where the light from the window won't reflect off the tube," Phil told him. Again, he and Cliff went through their routine, and again the bright line obligingly turned on its side. "What you're seeing, George, is the transmission of a single line, but this proves we can easily get a two-dimensional picture by adding the vertical scanning currents and magnetic deflecting coils," Phil explained. As George took in the significance of the situation, he became very jubilant, pointing Phil's hand and slapping him on the back at the same time. "There's no doubt about it, Phil. You have got a picture. My faith in you all these months has been justified." Then sobering, he added, "Of course, you'll want more of a picture before you show it to the Crocker Group, who financed the lab." Phil agreed. Then they decided to wire the news to Les Gorel in Los Angeles, who was doing funding. The wire read simply, "The damn thing works." And speaking of working, there is a person here today who saw an early demonstration, and that is Ted Lilienthal. Ted, if you want to sit there, I'll just bring the mic over. Make yourself comfortable.
Thank you very much. Yeah, back in 1929, I was at Galileo High School, and I was taking a course in physics, and I was teamed up with another guy to do experiments. We got to know each other quite well, and I guess after two or three months, he said to me one day, "Ted, have you ever seen television?" I said, "What the hell is television? I've never heard the word. It didn't exist." He said, "My brother is a television inventor and engineer, and he sends pictures through the air." I said, "That's impossible." He said, "No, it's not. That's what we're doing." He said, "You want to see it?" And I said, "Yes, you can pull my leg." He said, "Well, come down Saturday." And I came down to this building, and we'll show it to you. So I came down and went up through the same stairs there that are still there. And he introduced me to Fowler, who was then about in his early 20s, I believe. And we chatted for a while, and he said, we'll put on a show for you. So he called Oakland, where the transmitter was, and they put on a picture about Mary Pickford. And my God, the picture was just absolutely wonderful. I couldn't believe my eyes. I couldn't believe this was coming through the air from someplace else. So I went home later in the day, and I said, "My dad, that I had seen." He said, "That's impossible. How can they send pictures through the air?" I said, don't tell me it can't be done, I just saw it. So he was a stockbroker at that time, and he said, I'm going to check with some of my friends, and sure enough, a good many of them were backing Farrell at the time. But this was quite an experience, and I never will forget that. And I felt all my life that this non-recognition that's occurred of a man that is just as famous, should be just as famous as Thomas Edison, never is known by anybody. I have quizzed a lot of people. In fact, I was on a cruise a couple of years ago, and I had the vice president of CBS at the table at lunch, and I asked him who the inventor of television was. He hadn't the vaguest idea what who it was. But the changes in the world that have occurred through television, education, and other ways, are just remarkable. And I feel very proud to have met him at that time.
Thank you, Ted. And Krishna Farnsworth is going to read a portion from a book. I'll help with this, Krish. A book that was just published today by Paul Shatskin. And the book is The Boy Who Invented Television. Thank you. And here's the excerpt from Paul Shatskin's book. The story of television begins in Rigby, Idaho, in the spring of 1918, as a small wagon train reached the crest of the hill overlooking the Bungalow Ranch, a humble turn-of-the-century homestead named for two small cabins that dominated the landscape. The family of Lewis and Serena Farnsworth and their five children were about to arrive at their new home after an arduous journey over the mountains from their native Utah. Seated at the reins of one of the three covered wagons was the oldest child, Philo, age 11, named after his grandfather, who'd come west to settle the Salt Lake Valley with Brigham Young. While the adults in the wagons around him commented on the contours of the countryside and the promise of fertile soil, young Philo noticed one detail that the rest of the family missed. Strung between the buildings below, he could see wires, and shouted excitedly, "This place has electricity." And it's those kind of epiphanies that really create and define moments like the invention of television. And so this is a wonderful excerpt, and really is a moment to be remembered in the history of television.
Thank you, Christian. And also, we would like to point out over to my left and to your right, Farnsworth Television. Is it from Fort Wayne?
Yes,
from Fort Wayne.
My name is Jerry Grohlke. I'm the first television collector. I started collecting in 1963. I have 250 sets made before 1950.
And thank you for bringing them down. Which one did you like? The one on the right or the one on the left? Or the one behind the cable car? Diana was going to read a portion from Pam's book that talks about how a 14-year-old got the idea, the inspiration for television.
A very amazing person, Dr. Farnsworth, a genius beyond compare, and an American treasure. And I'm sorry, closer? Is this better? Okay, I'm a little nervous, so hang in here with me. In the spring of 1921, Lewis Farnsworth, Philo's father, purchased a 140-acre farm in Bybee, 4 miles from Rigby. Philo again operated a disc, this time with a single disc and two horses. He enjoyed the early morning hours, making a habit of rising early and studying from 4 to 5 when the house was quiet. He was out with the first sleepy chirping of the birds to milk the cows and feed the animals, and was in the field with the first rosy glow of sunrise. He filled his lungs with the fresh, dewy Idaho air. It was a beautiful, clear day, with just a few fleecy white clouds to break the deep blue of the sky, and he had all morning just to sit on the disc seat and think. As usual, his thoughts turned to how he might train electrons to convert the usual thoughts of people. As usual, his thoughts turned to how he might train electrons to convert a visual image into an electronic image so that it could be sent through the air. He knew this had to be done in a vacuum. He had read of a man named Braun who had made a crude vacuum tube and who had produced light by directing an electrical beam to a surface coated with photosensitive material. He had also read that an electron beam can be manipulated in a magnetic field. As he turned the horses for another row, he turned back along the even rows he had made in the damp earth. A thought struck him like a bolt out of the blue. The tremendous import of this revelation hit him like a physical blow and came near to unseating him. He could build the image like a page of print and paint the image line after line. With the speed of the electron, this could be done so rapidly the eye could view it as a solid picture. He could hardly contain his excitement. After mulling this idea around in his mind all this time and piecing it together one piece at a time, it had fallen together like a puzzle. Philo's constant thinking had borne fruit. In later years, he was to consider this inspiration the first major turn in the guided tour leading him to this distant vision. He humbly acknowledged an influence beyond himself.
Thank you, Dana. Besides Ted being a connection to the first views of some of the experiments in television, we have two of Phil's sisters. I'm going to ask them if they could just give us a few thoughts, memories, family memories, thoughts about the things that took place in that era. And so perhaps we could start out and we'll get some comments from them.
This thing to this building, I was about the second one woman that they televised. I was a girl of 19 and, of course, very, very interested in what my brother was doing. I have living in Provo, had just graduated from high school. Elma and I were in the same class. Did you know that she didn't even get out of high school? And look what she's been able to do. It's a wonderful thing that she accomplished. But I came to visit and was interested in what he was doing. And so they televised my picture when I came down to see the lab. And it was an exciting time. It's an exciting time for all of us. In October of that year, we brought our mother and Laura and Lincoln and Carl, and the whole family was here to live through the excitement of those days. And they were wonderful days. I was in the building one day, and they televised me. So I feel like I have the honor of being maybe one of the first family members outside of his wife who was televised on television.
I was in school at the time at Galileo. Ted and I graduated the same year. And it was a great year for me. I was hoping to go to across the bay to Cal, which I did. And I got married in that area, and had three children that all went to Stanford. So we had a little bit of a difference of opinion on the games. But anyway, I remember the day that we took our few friends in a class of chemistry over to the lab, and they were so impressed, probably more impressed with blowing of tubes than they were the picture, because we didn't get a picture that day. But I went over one day, and the president of our church was being televised. His name was Grant. Heber J. Grant. And he was so thrilled to do it. They had a little black curtain. It wasn't very big. It was probably about a third the biggest as the size of our circle here. He was just one of the celebrities that came. They were coming from all over. They came from Japan. They came from mostly from Hollywood, but a few from New York. And when Carl ushered Mr. Sorkin and showed him what Phil was doing, he said, "My goodness, I wish I had invented that." And that was in the headline of the, not, I wasn't in the headlines, but it was in the article that, he, that Earl Ennis wrote the next day in the Chronicle. And I was so pleased to see the Chronicle give so much attention to that very eventful day that Mr. Sorkin found out there was something that he didn't invent. The next thing I got from Phil was a personal letter. Well, actually, it was a little folder, and on one side of the folder was a picture of the ship that he was on. He and Pam were on their way to London, and that was going to be a wonderful, wonderful event, because he was to meet there the Mr. Baird of Scotland, who was sure that his mechanical television was going to be the sensation of the century. He was so disappointed when he saw Phil's picture, because it was so much better, and he knew right then that he'd lost it. And he turned away, and Pam said he cried. He was so disappointed. But we're glad that Phil was able to make that trip, because he won over England, and then he went to Germany. The Frenzy Company also got his cameras, and I saw Hitler for the last time on a newsreel, and down the last time that Germany had the Olympics, and he was the races were going on, and who was televising this? Farnsworth on the cameras, and this was in 1936. Phil had a little hard time getting out of Germany. They had to get him away from the Nazis, because they'd like to have kept him there. But he got home, took a little trip on the way home, went to the Riviera and enjoyed it. And they said, where did you go? They lost track of him. The office was worrying about getting all this money home with him. But anyway, we know who invented television, and we are so proud of it. Even in my little retirement home there in Palo Alto, these old people my age, they didn't know who he was. And I said to the woman in charge, well, I'm going to show them who he was. So I got the film. I had two copies, one that came from London, because it was directed by a Mr. Dugan from the BBC in London. And it was well done. The picture was a success. It was a fine picture. Well, we showed that picture, but I gave a little talk first, and Steve, my son, was there tying it in with all these people in Palo Alto that had thought that everything in the world ended right there in Silicon Valley, but it began in Silicon Valley with Phil's invention. That's what happened.
I'm going to ask Mark Farnsworth if he could read from another book. And this is a book that's also out just at this time. It's from Evan Schwartz, and it's called The Last Lone Inventor. And thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Dave. And I appreciate everything you've done for my grandmother and the whole television. Dear readers, imagine you discovered a new idea but didn't know anyone who could understand it. That is what happened in 1921 to Farley T. Farnsworth, a 14-year-old Idaho farm boy who constantly read about radio in Einstein, and then dreamt up a modern television while plowing his father's potato field. Driven by his obsession, Farnsworth found a local philanthropist who couldn't grasp the idea but was willing to fund the dream. By the age of 20, in 1926, Farnsworth was operating his own laboratory above a garage in San Francisco and filing his first patent applications. The result publicly publicity brought him to the attention of David Sarnoff, the celebrated founder of the NBC radio network, whose own RSA laboratory soon began investigating, without much success, a way to transmit a moving image. Determined to control television the way he monopolized radio by owning all the royalty producing patents, Sarnoff, from the lofty heights of his office in New York's skyscraper, devised a plan to steal credit from Farnsworth Designs. The last lone inventor tells the story of the epic struggle between two equally passionate adversaries and how their clash symbolized a turning point in the culture of creativity.
Thank you. Of all the people that we talked to in the last couple of weeks, I just have to say that the friendliest voice that I spoke to during that time when we were trying to get things to work was Phil Kipper. And Phil, I know you probably don't want to say something, but I'm going to make you. But he had an article that came out in an Examiner on Friday, Chronicle, and we had one from the Examiner also. But anyway, here's Phil Kipper for a second, and then we'll have George.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's a great pleasure to be here and to represent San Francisco State and our broadcasting department. I'd like to ask some of our students to raise their hands. They put their banner up here, College Students in Broadcasting. We have the oldest broadcasting program in the country and also the largest. We have 750 or more students studying radio and television at San Francisco State, mostly television. So they are, in a certain respect, the grandchildren of Philo Farnsworth as well. And we owe him a great debt of gratitude. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. And George, as I say, another friendly voice and literally this sound system, he said, I'll be there with the sound, so here we are, you can hear us. And also, George, if you would, you can let's plug the Tesla Society.
Thank you very much. The San Francisco Tesla Society is been around for about 10 years. We have monthly meetings on science, various science topics, and it's mostly a place where forgotten or neglected or new scientists with new ideas can spread their ideas and before the general public. So everyone is invited. It's always free. It's usually the second Sunday of each month, except for July and August, which we take off for vacation. But you can find us at 3220 Sacramento Street in Lyon, and the second Sunday of the month is tomorrow. So naturally, we're going to have a program on Philo T. Farnsworth, and it runs from 1 to 5, 3220 Sacramento Street, San Francisco, near Lyon. We hope you all can come. Do look for us on the web if you want to find out about future events coming up. We're over at www.sftesla.org. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George. And another Hungarian to follow, Alex Horvath, is going to read from an article that he had published in the Examiner the other day. So here's Alex.
Thank you. To prepare for this article, I actually was fortunate enough to call back to Indiana and speak to both Pam Farnsworth and Kent Farnsworth and get their takes on the invention of television and all the history. And what I'll read to you is towards the end of the article, it'll kind of lead to what Philo, his ultimate hit on television was. 75 years after Philo T. Farnsworth's invention, there's talk of presenting Pym with an Emmy at the annual television awards show slated for September 22nd, according to Wire reports. Beyond that, the Farnsworth's contribution has been largely overlooked until recently mentioned only briefly in the pages of introductory broadcasting textbooks. Two books have been written recently about the inventor. Philo T. Farnsworth, The Father of Television by Donald G. Godfrey and Christopher H. Sterling, University of Utah Press, and The Boy Who Invented Television by Paul Shotskin, which is being released today by TeamCon Books to coincide with the anniversary. Kent Farnsworth says that there were some things his father may have liked about television all these years later. He felt television could be used to entertain but still educate. He would have been a strong advocate for what we now call edutainment, says Kent. I think he would have been pleased that many of the cable channels do exactly that. The History Channel, Cooking and Discovery, they teach and hold one's attention while entertaining them. The moon landing, that scored heavily with them, he continues. There's a classic line where Phil turned to Pam. He looked at her and said, now this makes it all worthwhile.
What did Mr. Farnsworth do later points in his life after he was paid licensing fees for television? Generally, he contributed, I could show you in the back of this book a list of significant patents
that just go page after page. For instance, when the lunar landing took place, there are certain television techniques that were used to transmit that back to the Earth. And, you know, thank you, Philo Farnsworth. The system's in electro-microscopic work. One of his early lab assistants, Russell Varian, who worked here, went down to San Carlos and created Varian Associates. He and his brother developed all the medical imaging systems, radar systems. A lot of the people that worked with him went into other fields. Ernest Lawrence, the Lawrence Livermore Laboratories, the first atom smashers, he came here and he looked at some of the amplification systems that Farnsworth was developing, went back to his labs, and then announced years later that he got some of his basic concepts and ideas from visiting the Farnsworth labs. So he was a person who was willing to almost give away a lot of his techniques and concepts to anybody that had a chance to visit. Well, this is 75 years later, but once again, from distant vision, Chapter 7, 202 Green Street, Cliff Gardner, Pam's brother, Philo's brother-in-law, was standing on the corner of California and Powell Street in San Francisco. The telegram he received from Phil while he was in Baker, Oregon, had said, "Have backing from San Francisco bankers. Stop. Job for you. Stop. Meet us, corner, California and Powell Streets, noon, each day, starting September 19th, until we get there. Stop. Phil." Now, imagine, I think the average age here is probably over 20, but just imagine that you're 20 years old, 21 years old, and you get a telegram from someone who says, you know, drop everything and come and meet us. We're going to invent television. You know, what an exciting event that would be in your life. However, he did have to come here on his own. He barely had enough funds to do it, and I think he was literally running out of money while he was waiting for Phil and Pam to be driving up from Los Angeles in a roadster with a suitcase on the back that fell off halfway up here. They didn't have any clothes when they got here. And here he is. Here's Cliff Gardner sitting up at the corner of California and Powell Street on the curb, just, you know, watching the cable cars go by, with probably not a care in the world except, you know, how he's going to pay the rent tonight. But just, you know, just stop and think of the excitement that must be in your mind at that age and at that point in their lives when they were all going to meet together, a bunch of young kids, and go and invent television in this lab up here. And so I was just thinking, in conclusion, that perhaps what we could tell Pam today is that we're sitting on the curb here, Pam, and we're waiting for you to get here. So, that might be our final thought for the day. The Marine Corps motto, they say there are no ex-Marines, only former Marines, is Semper Fidelis. And that means always faithful. And him and Phil's favorite song was Always, the ballad Always. And faithful is a nice concept. So we're always faithful to what they've done for us. And as I say, we're sitting on the curb here for you, Pam, if you can see any of this live feed. So anyway, that will conclude our day, and we thank you all so very much, and enjoy the rest of the day, and let's see what happens in the next 75 years of television. Thank you.